Welcome
Actually,
back.
Where are we? Are we ready to start?
Yes, David. We already started.
It's late. Let's get started.
Not as late as last night, but
2-1.
All right. This is the Championship Week video notebook. Night number Stalika.
Number five.
Five. Night number five. Day number five. I'm your host Chad Sherwood, joined by John Stalika, David Griggs, back with us from Racketeer.org again, Rocco Miller as well. And this is the podcast where we are going to review and recap all the conference tournament games, preview what's coming up on Saturday in the conference tournaments, and discuss a lot more stuff, I guess. But we'd like to start with some news and notes. And Rocco, let me start with you here. There was, in terms of news and notes, there was some pretty darn big news out of LSU today.
There was.
Will Wade suspended indefinitely following what we discussed last night and the fact that there is a wiretap recording of him saying some stuff that is pretty darn damning.
Yeah, and this obviously throws a wrinkle into a magical run that LSU has been on.
Damning. Great verbiage. Pretty darn damning.
It was pretty darn damning.
Darn damning. There we go.
And, you know, Chad, this is, you know, we went through this a little bit with Sean Miller last year. He did get suspended for that Oregon game. But then ultimately, you know, the player in question, DeAndre Ayton, never had to sit. And in this case, as far as we know, Javonte Smart won't have to sit for LSU as of right now as we record this. But with the information that came out that they have on tape, seems like a little bit more substantial than Miller last year. So it really remains to be seen if he'll be able to come back and coach. Miller was able to meet with the school last year and kind of get a program in place to come back. And I don't know. I'll just say Will Wade's got his work cut out for him, and we'll just have to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I think what Will Wade is accused of saying here is a lot worse than even what they had on Miller. And
right,
I just got a note here also that was not the only news about people being suspended. Both Creighton and TCU both suspended assistant coaches related to the FBI probe as well today. So there is things are starting to fall apart, and you know, at the end of the day, you know, half the Division I may declare itself ineligible for the NCAA tournament. So who knows what's going on.
It ruined his, apparently this broke while he was at a luncheon at LSU, like at some basketball luncheon. Talk about ruining your lunch.
Let's talk about a little bit about what's going on the court. Aside from conference tournaments, Stalika, the biggest game today was the Maryland-Minnesota game, which wasn't much of a game. Maryland kind of cruised over the Gophers.
Yeah, Minnesota, they failed to continue their momentum from their win against Purdue. And so they'll probably need a win or two to at least feel safe in the Big Ten tournament. But I think compared to a team like Ohio State, the Gophers are a little more safely in the field at this point.
Yeah, I don't think you penalize them much for this loss here. But they, you know, one more win would really help for the Gophers to lock things up. I agree with that, too. Three other teams that did pick up wins of note. Buffalo finished out its regular season with a win, as did Virginia Tech and VCU, David.
Yeah. VCU, I think this pretty much locks them in. Virginia Tech still in that hunt for that protected seed. And what was the other? Villanova.
Buffalo. Virginia Tech, and VCU with three I mentioned. Villanova didn't play tonight as far as I know.
I said Buffalo. I said Buffalo. That's what I said. But no, I think, yeah, Buffalo, we've already locked them on the survival board. So that means they're in.
And aside from conference tournaments coming up tomorrow, Rocco, there is a lot of regular season games. Every conference other than the American and the I believe it's the American and the Big Ten will finish up on Sunday. Everybody else is going to be finishing up here on Saturday. A lot of huge games, not enough time to go over all of them, but the two of note, the Duke, North Carolina, Michigan State, huge games tomorrow.
Yeah, those are huge games. Those are blockbusters, big national games, one seed on the line kind of for, you know, North Carolina specifically there. So yeah, those will be blockbusters. You've also got other big games like Tennessee at Auburn and Texas Tech at Iowa State. And so it's going to be a heck of a day tomorrow.
So I believe the fun fact here is they're 60 miles apart and have never met in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
8 miles apart, yep.
Well, no, I looked this up, I think. They're 13 miles apart, and they've only met two or three times in the NCAA tournament.
I don't know who we're talking about at this point. Let's, you know, we also have 15 out of the 17 conferences that have not finished action yet today yet at this point are going to be fishing up here on Saturday. One of those conferences is the Big West. And I actually want to start there before we get into the conference tournament action, awesome. Because, you know, I actually want to start. Let me pull up here on the screen. Let's see if we get it there. Here's the Big West standings heading into the final regular season day. And I'm not going to talk about the top of the Big West. I want to talk about the bottom of the Big West.
Yeah.
Really interesting place to start a podcast, I know. But only 8 teams qualify for the Big West tournament. UC Riverside is 3-12, Cal Poly 2-13. If tomorrow UC Riverside loses at UC Davis, very possible. Cal Poly on senior day, the last home game for their head coach, Joe Claro, who is not going to be coming back next year, somehow pulls the upset of UCSB. These two teams finished tied. Now, we did a little bit of research here, and unfortunately, it's not showing up on the screen, so I got to pull this down for a second here.
Man.
We had a little bit of a fail there. Let's try this again.
Yeah. Well, let's not have any more fails for the rest of the show.
Okay.
We failed yesterday. We're failing now.
This is the Big West tiebreaker rules. And if these two teams finish tied, we've taken a look at it, tiebreaker one and tiebreaker two will still be tied. So we go to number three. If still tied, the higher seeded team shall be determined by a coin toss.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, David, it says by the commissioner.
Yeah.
I actually contacted the Big West, and they said that we're free to toss the coin if we want to do it.
Well, yeah, because the commissioner isn't available.
So, David.
Yes.
You have been given permission to do this coin toss.
I have.
Go ahead.
Let's toss the coin.
Go ahead, David. Toss the coin. I guess we got to figure out who's heads and who's tails here. So,
okay,
let's get the standings back up there. Riverside or Cal Poly?
Yeah, Riverside and Cal Poly.
Okay.
Well, Shouldn't that be the kind of thing that you put on the Jumbotron at Cal Poly? Oh, wait.
Okay, David, heads is Riverside, tails is Cal Poly. Go ahead.
There's been another – well, I mean, from now on, let's not have any more errors.
What's the
error? I don't have a coin.
All right. We're going to have to get David a coin. We'll come back to this later on in the show.
Yeah, we'll
Let's move over to conference tournaments then, and let's go to the Ohio Valley Conference, which was the doubleheader of the night here. Rocco, let me start with you. These two games, we expected some great games, especially that second one. We got them.
Yeah, we did. The second one was a heck of a battle, a rematch of a game that I got to attend earlier this year between Jacksonville State and Murray State. Of course, Murray State getting a lot of the hype with John Morant, incredible talent for a league of this caliber. And Jacksonville State, just a really gritty team with a lot of seniors, and they play very well together. Brunell down low's a load and gave Murray State a lot of problems both times this year. Murray State ends up getting the win due to a John Morant 3-point play, and Jacksonville State unable to get a clean look at the end and ends up jacking up an air ball to lose in heartbreaking fashion. Murray State is on to face Belmont in the championship that I think most people from a college basketball national landscape level wanted to see. So it should be a big one tomorrow.
Absolutely. Slika, what do you think happens tomorrow?
I think Belmont is going to end up winning, and Murray State is probably going to be headed towards the NIT.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Say Murray State wins. Are we able to look at the profiles, Chad?
Yep.
Okay. Like, pull Belmont up, and because they're kind of an interesting case. And when you look at their profile, we were talking about this before we came on the air, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up. When you top out Belmont's profile, it doesn't top out. I mean, the win at Lipscomb and the win at Murray State, when you look at the combined record at home that those two teams have, that's really good. Austin Peay, another pretty decent road win. But, you know, the loss to Green Bay, I don't know how much that's going to eat at them. It is a Tier 3 loss. I don't think Jack State will hurt them that much. Is there enough here for them to land inside the bubble if they don't beat Murray State? I personally think that they should be in. I think that they've done enough. When I look at their profile and when I look at other teams that are on the bubble, particularly Clemson and Jesus, St. Mary's, some people that have, I mean, certainly better than St. Mary's, but I think that they've done better than some of these power conference teams that are like 1-10 against teams in the field and have maybe 2 or 3 true road wins. I like this a lot better. I don't know what the real committee's going to do. What do you all think?
Well, Rocco, you're the bracketologist here. Is this Belmont team in with a loss to Murray?
I think they're still in the conversation. Where I have them now is very, very close to that cutoff. And, you know, as we've talked about on several previous shows, the cut line is going to be a very much a moving target over the next 9-10 days, however many days we have left till Selection Sunday. So Belmont fans would definitely need a lot of those conference tournaments to go to teams that are already projected to go into the field. I think if we lost 2 or 3 bids, chances would be not as good for Belmont to get in. But they do have the aspects of a resume that would warrant an at-large bid with a net inside the top 45, let's just say top 50 to be safe, but if they did lose tomorrow. They've got the strength of schedule in the top 75 for non-conference purposes. You know, they've got a few good wins to support this. So I think there would be enough for Belmont fans to hold on to some hope going into next Sunday.
Yeah, and it isn't just the bid stealers, Rocco, that kind of climb their way into the bubble. It's teams like currently like what Florida is and what Temple is and, right. You know, to a degree, yep. I don't want to say Memphis. I think they're a little too far out. But teams that are straddling the bubble or even outside of it that can get big wins in their conference tournament, mm-hmm. but and put themselves in without winning it. Belmont never had that chance. They were what they were basically for the last 3 weeks. And I guess my argument, the one I made before the show, if you like Belmont now and you liked them 3 weeks ago, why would you like them any less if they didn't win tomorrow? They've already beaten Murray State.
Because David, they'll have another loss. And when you are this close to the bubble, you can't afford any loss, even if it's to a good team. This is your chance to take the step up and solidify yourself as a team with a win, as a tournament team with a win.
And well, you might want to double check. Are you sure one more win's enough, Chad?
And David, you are taking away a spot in the field by Murray State winning. You got to remember that. Murray State wins, there's one less spot in the field.
And unlike Wofford, for example, Belmont only went 2-2 so far against the cream of the crop in the OVC, whereas Wofford swept their way 6-0 through the top of the SoCon, for example.
Yeah, exactly, John. And so, David, I think that Belmont – while I would love to see them in, I just don't. I think they're going to be, you know, probably a one seed in the NIT if they lose tomorrow. That's where I've got them.
I think Chad. That's probably
if NC State gets in and Belmont does it, I am going to be sick. Just so you know.
Well, let's keep things moving here. We've got a lot more games to get through here, and we're really slowing down. But the other conference I was in semifinals today was the Big South, where Radford had a battle from Charleston Southern, was down most of that game. Rocco, you had called them yesterday, but the team from North Charleston, known as Charleston Southern, didn't have enough to keep with Radford the entire game, who once again came back for a victory. And then in the second game, the Gardner-Webb-Campbell game was the upset of the biggest upset, I think, of championship week so far.
Yeah, it's the first. So that's the first one seed, I think, that has lost. The only one seed that's lost at this point out of the conference tournaments that have kicked off. And The Charleston Southern game, I was, you know, this team came in hot, as I was talking about earlier this week. Great game plan. They held Radford to 19 points in the first half. I think they just hit a little bit of wall playing their third game of the week here in 4 days. In the second half, allowed 44 points. There was a big stretch there that really swung the game, a 14-0 run by Radford. Charleston Southern just really couldn't recover, and Radford eventually put them away.
Yeah, and Gardner-Webb now goes to Radford on Sunday. This conference takes tomorrow off. It will be on Radford's home court for the championship game. Chris Clemens will not be in the NCAA tournament. On top of that, he is still 25 points away from number 3 all-time, passing the L-train Lionel Simmons, and about 57 points away from number 2 all-time in scoring. The team will be in the NIT. They're probably going to have to win a game in the NIT if he wants to hit number 2, and I don't know if that they will. They're probably going to be a 7 or 8 seed in the NIT. So,
yeah,
would have been nice to see him get one more game just so they can have a shot at getting that number 2.
And a really tremendous season for Campbell, a really good story. They kind of battled their way up to first place after, while being good, not, they certainly didn't lead from start to finish. It's a program that's improved drastically over the last several years. I kind of hated it. Nothing against Gardner-Webb. I just kind of hated it for them and for Chris Clemens that the run at the tournament ended today.
Well, Stalica, the running Bulldogs there from Gardner-Webb, they've had wins at Wake Forest, a win at Georgia Tech this year. Can they pick up a win at Radford and go to the big dance?
Radford is better than both those teams, by the way.
It would be great to see Gardner-Webb go to the tournament for the first time, but I think Radford is going to be a little too unbeatable at home for this one.
And I agree with you on that. Let's move to some conferences that were in the quarterfinals, and it was quarterfinal day at Arch Madness, David, in the Missouri Valley Conference, where we saw two upsets by seeds and two top seeds winning, and both of them struggled a little bit, but go ahead.
Loyola Valpo was, it's like banging my head against the wall would be more enjoyable than watching this. Just not a good game at all. And for the most part, neither was Drake Illinois State, as you started tweeting Arch Badness. The other two games were really good. Like Bradley, Missouri State was good, but like Southern Illinois, Northern Iowa seesawed back in
game.
Northern Iowa led for much of it. Southern Illinois came back, got the lead in the final minute, and Northern Iowa eventually made plays down the stretch. But I think we had three lead changes in the final minute of that game?
We did. That was a ton of fun. Interestingly enough, they both ended up being the same score there, 61-58.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realize that till I saw the bracket.
But Stalica, Bradley, the minor upset there too over Missouri State. They get Loyola Chicago tomorrow.
I forget the year, but I think there was one year where in the MVC, everyone that won had scored about, 68 or 69 points in the same night.
Yeah, go ahead.
But by the same token, I think Northern Iowa had the more impressive win tonight, although that game against Southern Illinois was more of a pick 'em going into that one.
But Rocco, in terms of the top two seeds here, Loyola Chicago kind of looked like the Loyola Chicago team we saw last year's NCAA tournament, and Drake looked like they weren't missing two of their top players.
All right, this Drake team just continues to impress. They had, Tramiel Murphy, I don't even think he's been starting most of the year, just stepped up big time, had a great game, shot 11 for 15 from the field, 26 points. Carried these guys. Nick McGlynn's a great senior leader as well. And Brady Ellingson, of course, the Iowa transfer, continues to give them amazing minutes. So, I mean, with the parity in the league, Drake, even with this roster right now, I think can they might have enough horses still, though, to pull it off.
With a short roster, though, three games in 3 days is going to be rough. Yeah.
It is. You think at some point they'll flame out. Also interesting, I think, is that we've got a battle of Illinois in the first semifinal and a battle of Iowa in the second.
I did not notice that. Yeah.
So that should just add a little bit more juice to the storylines coming up tomorrow.
It should be a fun pair of semifinals. David, do you think either Bradley or Northern Iowa can pull off the upset?
No. Okay. I do think Northern Iowa can. In fact, I'm expecting them to. I'm not expecting Bradley to.
Okay, so you're going with Northern Iowa, Loyola, Chicago. I think I kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
It was also the start of the quarterfinal round of the Metro Atlantic. We had two of the quarterfinals today. This tournament, so far, five games in, has been incredible. Look at that. Oh. Our biggest blowout was 4 points in five games so far.
Yeah, and Manhattan led Canisius for basically the entire game, and it was kind of upsetting because it's not that we wanted a second matchup between Iona and Manhattan so much as that we needed a second matchup between Iona and Manhattan, and we're not going to have it. When was the last time those two didn't play each other twice? But anyway, Manhattan really, I mean, again, we talked yesterday about all the parity in this league, and Manhattan really played well in that game. Canisius trailed for most of it, but yeah, two more great games. I mean, if you bought full session tickets to this tournament, you've gotten your money's worth already.
Well, let's talk about that Iona St. Peter's game, though. St. Peter's had the lead most of that game on Iona as well. Then until late, Iona takes the lead, and then Devontae Turner for St. Peter's, a senior, goes red hot, 3 3-pointers in about the last minute there. Gets the game, they get the game tied up, and he gets fouled. I'm sorry. I think they pull within a point, and he gets fouled.
Yeah.
Goes to the free throw line after hitting three threes to drag his team back in and misses the free throws. And it was just heartbreak for Devontae Turner that he ends his career like that.
Yeah.
But Rocco, Iona and Canisius are on. But tomorrow we've got Ryder, Siena, and Quinnipiac Monmouth, the other two quarters.
Yeah, and Quinnipiac's just my gut feel pick for the tournament. But, of course, you know, like we've been saying, anybody can win it. I think both games will be two more close ones. I want to see this trend of 4 points or less continue all the way through.
Stilicho, it was also had action today in the SoCon opening round day. Saw VMI pick up their first SoCon tournament win in about 300 years. And then Samford took care of Seattle also.
These were mainly appetizers when you consider what's going to be coming ahead. I don't think a team like Wofford, for example, is going to have to sweat BMI very much, but you don't want to leave a potential at-large to chance right here.
Yeah. What a lineup for tomorrow. I don't think Wofford's going to have any trouble with VMI, and even if they do, I still think they're in. I disagree that we shouldn't be holding them, but I get the point. Chattanooga, East Tennessee State is going to be a fun game. Pretty decent rivalry. Samford was the seventh place team, but that's a deceiving seventh place team. I think that they're a lot better than that. Greensboro better watch out, because while Greensboro's favorite, and I think that there's some talk of them even ending up on the bubble still, that Samford can beat them. They really can.
You're stepping to me right now, David.
Yeah, I am stepping. Yes, I love it. Are you?
Yes. The Samford, we're going. I'm all in here. I think Samford pulls the upset tomorrow, Rocco. That's my big upset of the day.
Hey, Samford's proven they can hang. I mean, obviously, Wofford had needed that was their closest call all year, was that buzzer beater overtime win, and they played UNC Greensboro to single digits both times, just lost both times. So maybe third time's the charm here tomorrow for the Bulldogs.
You don't see any other upsets, do you? Mercer,
I can't really see it. I mean, Furman destroyed Mercer both times. East Tennessee State destroyed Chattanooga both times. VMI actually kept Wofford to only 11-point win, but it's still too much to ask for.
VMI actually hung with Kentucky earlier this year, too, for about three-quarters of a game. So
they did. I forgot about that.
They're on a four-game win streak, so, I mean, they got nothing to lose.
They hung with them longer than a Greensboro did, if that's the case.
Greensboro was in there for most of the game.
One other conference that was in action today, it's that 500-round, I don't know, what is this, David, a seven-layer burrito here we've got in the West Coast Conference.
This is the ladder of all ladders. Like, next year they're reformatting it. It's just one game a day, 10 rounds, 9 versus 10 versus 8, 7, all the way up to the top of the ladder.
But Rocco, you're the Fighting Lorenzo Romars got by Loyola Marymount. The mild upset there.
That was a big win. And it'd be one thing too in this tournament format if they were like out in the middle of Kansas, but they're making these teams play every day in Vegas, and they have to avoid all the many temptations that are around them and focus on basketball. So just making the challenge that much harder. But, yeah, Pepperdine, wow, big win. Loyola Marymount with an interesting year. They started so hot with so much promise and then just fizzled here towards the second half of WCC play. Be interesting to see how things progress in the future for Coach Dunlap. And then in San Diego, just a dangerous 7 seed, lost to Santa Clara late but got revenge tonight. I think Pepperdine, who just beat San Francisco, I think, last week or the week before, And San Diego definitely capable of beating BYU, could keep this going for another night.
Yeah, let's roll these teams right across this entire 500 level.
Rocco, I have a question for you, and I this just occurred to me, like, because you know how conference tournaments work, and I know that you're out on the West Coast, you may know this. There's a break on Sunday to accommodate BYU.
Yes.
And the semis are not until Monday. We are going to be 4 rounds into the tournament before Gonzaga and St. Mary's even arrive in the city.
I would ask this hypothetical, though.
Is that right? I mean, they're not even going to be there.
What happens if San Francisco and Pepperdine go overtime because BYU is actually scheduled for the later game, which could potentially run into midnight on Sunday?
Well, yeah, it's a 9:30 Vegas time starts. So, yeah.
Make them start Monday morning or
start up again first thing Monday morning? Yeah.
It could be a good one for a quadrupler.
It's going to be a long night for anybody that stays up for that game, especially with daylight savings time coming up here. BYU San Diego. Like I just said, I think we can see some upsets. And if we get that Pepperdine upset, we do have Romar versus Few in the semifinal. So.
Yes.
Which is not far-fetched when you consider how San Francisco also finished the year with a thud.
Yeah. Some conferences in action here on Saturday that did not play today. We are back in action again in the Northeast Conference. Yes. And Rocco, you're going to be live on location up in Teaneck, New Jersey. Robert Morris at Fairleigh Dickinson, the early game.
Yes, so I do need to get some sleep after this, but so I can get a pregame preview together. I haven't been able to dig in too much, but I'm very excited to see this. You guys talked about the Northeast Conference several times over the last couple of years being on the show with you. I want to see a packed gym tomorrow. I want to see a overtime game, hopefully. Really have no preference on who wins, of course, but just excited. I'll have a media pass too, so I'll try to get lots of pictures and send them through.
Yeah, I've been up to there. It's a fun little building up there in Teaneck. It's not much of a building, but it's fun. The other game, though, it's like Brooklyn at SFPA. I don't think we're predicting an upset there, are we?
It's certainly possible when you consider Derek Kellogg has never actually lost a game in his brief career in the NEC tournament at LIU Brooklyn. But now that you think about it, I'll probably go St. Francis and Robert Morris to meet in the title game.
We also are starting off three new conference tournaments tomorrow, beginning with the first round play in the Colonial, where we have the James Madison Towson and Elon UNC Wilmington play-in games at 4 and 6:30, and then before we move into the meat of the conference tournament. So I'd like to ask two questions here. David, let me start with you on this one. Any upset in either of these games tomorrow? And more importantly, who's going to win this whole entire event here?
No, I think James Madison, especially the way they play down the stretch, gets that one fairly easily. And Wilmington is so bad that Elon.
Other than when they're beating Hofstra.
Well, yeah. Other than that. I think there was a stretch during the season where College of Charleston for a couple of weeks was really bad. But you take that out, and they were good before, and they were good after it, and they're playing in their home city. I think that they had the highest ceiling. I know Hofstra clobbered them the last time they played, but I'm going to go with CFC to win this.
Rocco?
Yeah, to win the tournament, I'm going to take Northeastern. I just think they have the best all-around team. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They're finally healthy. And the last half of the conference schedule, I think they performed as the best team, as Hofstra stumbled a few times. And Northeastern did lose to Charleston in Charleston in overtime in a very good game. So we could have a great semifinal, which could actually be a favorite in Vegas over the top seed Hofstra if that ends up being the final.
I agree with you. I'm with you on the Northeastern pick. Slicka, real quick, your pick in the conference tournament.
I do think Hofstra ends up winning the whole thing, but I wouldn't be terribly shocked if a team like William and Mary knocked the pride out either, clearing the way for Northeastern to win the title.
Yeah, William and Mary has made a few runs to the conference finals and never gone over it. On that very short list of teams that have never made the NCAA tournament despite being in D1 since its inception.
They're also coming in with a 5-game win streak too, so.
And a Delaware team that was surprisingly good this year, too. This will actually be a fun matchup on Sunday, but tomorrow's games, I don't think we're going to see much of note other than just hoping they're close games. America East starts tomorrow, quarterfinal round day, 4 games on campus sites here. Maine at Vermont, Lowell at Hartford, Binghamton at Stony Brook, Albany at UMBC, and what I think is the most interesting, maybe the pretty interesting game down there. But David, are we just waiting for Vermont, Stony Brook in this conference?
I don't know. UMBC has shown quite a bit of life. Now, granted, winning at Stony Brook won't be easy, but they were right in that race for second and even first all the way up until that last weekend. But, chances are it's going to be Vermont and Stony Brook in the final again, that's just probably going to advance all the way through. I think the chalk will hold, but don't count out UMBC.
Rocco, you see any upsets tomorrow?
Yeah, I think the Albany-UMBC game is going to be a really good one. Albany beat them a couple weeks ago by 9, and the first time they played, it was a one-point loss in overtime, the game that was at UMBC. So I think they'll come in confident, and I imagine that's going to be a tight game. But if UMBC gets by that, they're definitely a threat to win the whole thing with the ownage they have on Vermont recently. Outside of that, I don't know if the 4-5 game is much of an upset if Lowell wins. I mean, Hartford's been all over the board this year. But I'll say I think the only real upset would be Albany over UMBC, and I do think it's possible.
Will our colleague Zach be in the house for a Hartford and a UMass Lowell tomorrow?
We'll reach out to that. But we've spoke so much Maine basketball this season. Nobody's picking Maine to knock off Vermont.
No.
Stalika, you going with Vermont or Stony Brook or somebody else to win it all?
I'm going to go with Vermont to avenge their disappointing loss against UMBC last year and end up beating the Retrievers in the title game this year.
I got Vermont winning this too. I think that's the right pick in this year. I think it's this year they're finally going to get back there. One more conference starting things off. And Stalika, let me start with you again. It is Summit League, the beginning of the quarterfinals. They split the quarterfinals here over 2 days. So we have the 1-8 game between South Dakota State and Western Illinois and the 2-7 game between Omaha and North Dakota. Do you see anything happening in either of these two games, or is it just going to be a turn the game off for 3 seconds and turn it back off again?
I think the games in the Women's Summit League are going to be much more worth watching because they actually have two top 25 teams in South Dakota and South Dakota State. But as far as what's ultimately going to happen, I think Omaha can surprise South Dakota State and end up making their first NCAA bid out of the Summit.
They certainly can. That's I agree with that. I don't think I'm still picking South Dakota State, but Omaha, you bet. South Dakota State's gotten a lot of love because of the star power they have and the familiarity. They've been to the tournament before, but this is a good Omaha team.
I like that pick, Rocco, but there's a couple other dangerous teams here. Fort Wayne, North Dakota State, don't overlook anybody in this conference, right?
Right. Right. And with it being played in South Dakota, I think South Dakota, North Dakota State, South Dakota State, of course, have a clear advantage. I know North Dakota State's got probably the largest alumni base, so they will send a lot of fans down there. They've been playing hot later in the year. So I look for one of those three teams to win it. Obviously, if it's North Dakota State or South Dakota, it'd be a pretty big surprise. Omaha's got the talent, but I just can't picture them getting all the way through. And Fort Wayne, you know, they'll put up a ton of points, but I think at some point they'll hit a wall. I'd say South Dakota State would be my pick, but if it's going to come from somewhere else, look for the 4-5 winner to do it.
I may have to brush up on my geography, but I think Omaha is just as far up Interstate 29 as North Dakota State would be from where they're holding the tournament.
Yeah, I think it's about equal distance, but North Dakota State alumni base, much, much larger than Omaha. From a volume standpoint.
Even though that's all the conference tournaments, before we go to the Survival Board, I want to bring up one other conference real quick. Watch it, David. Big West on the screen again. Have you found your coin yet?
Yes, we have.
Can we get that coin flip? Heads for Riverside, tails for Cal Poly.
This is heads and this is tails.
David, that's a...
All right, it's...
What is
actually,
it?
Oh, well, I can't. Both sides were the same. Oh,
David, you need a coin, not a CD. We're going to keep working on this, folks.
Quarters have a way of triggering the puppet.
Bobs here. I mean, we've been messing up way too. Okay. People are going to watch this and think it's a joke.
Well, I want to talk about a conference that's not a joke. The Ivy League, I'm going to pull this up real quick because while it is not in the conference tournament until next weekend, we have a de facto pretty much a conference tournament game tomorrow. The game is Brown at Penn. The winner will be in the Ivy League tournament. The loser is out. So Brown at Penn. Do we have a prediction here, Rocco?
I'm going to go on a limb and take Brown. I like the way they're playing right now. I like them all through non-conference. I think they finally fixed some of their early Ivy League woes. But it is a tough task. They just had to win in at Princeton. Now they got to get to Philly and win this game tomorrow. So I think it's going to be a heck of a game, but I'll take Brown.
Yeah. I like that pick, but I don't know that they can pull off the Penn Princeton sweep. But I think that
it's gonna be tough.
And Penn dominated Yale at home tonight, so I'm going. Yeah. I'm going to go with Penn here. I think
that Penn finally showed a sense of urgency that we haven't seen from them in the Ivy League all year.
One of the things, if Penn's coach can convince them that Brown is in Philadelphia and this is a Big Five game, Brown has no chance.
Yes, they may still make the Ivy League tournament and at least not fall in the huge question of, you know, 4-0 in the Big Five and can't even make your conference tournament.
Yeah.
Let's go to our survival board. And David, can you tell everybody what this is here, this thing?
Yeah, it's basically it's an instruction guide. I mean, to call it a tool probably understates it. It's an instructional guide for the selection committee. And by that, I mean it instructs them on what they should be doing. So it's everybody that's still playing and that, in theory, could win a conference tournament, make the NCAA tournament, go to the Sweet 16, go to the Final Four, and win it all. There's 294 teams coming into today that are still playing, and we have them basically broken down into three categories. Tomorrow we're going to have a fourth, but right now there's only three. There's bold teams. That means those teams are in, even if they lose tomorrow and lose their first conference tournament game. There's teams in italics. That means look at them. Don't just throw them away, but look at them. And then there's the teams that are not in italics, and you just throw those away. They need the automatic bid to win.
And it's amazing that going into the final day of the conference season in the Big East, for example, everyone except DePaul is still in italics right now.
Yeah.
But the way they played last night, you can make an argument that maybe the Blue Demons should also be considered.
But if you see how we were heading into the day here, Big South had four teams in it, for example, and we had a total of 294 teams available. Let's see what happened as a result of all of today's games.
Okay.
277, oh, big jump.
Down to 277, yeah.
And if you look down here, let's take another look at the Big South there. Only two teams left.
Only Gardner two.
Gardner-Webb and Radford's. On Sunday, one of those teams will go bold and all caps because they'll be in as an auto bid winner.
Right, yeah. So down to 277. Man, it's chipping away. We've eliminated over 70 teams.
Let's take a look, for example, down in the Ohio Valley Conference. Interesting here. Both teams are in italics. One of these teams will be clinching tomorrow. The other one is not going to be eliminated because they may still be worthy of consideration as
right,
we discussed
at
the top of the show.
Yeah.
On that note, let me pull this down here. David, I think you had an issue with something that I did last night, though.
Well, yeah, okay. We have been trying to fix college basketball. We've been pointing out problems. Fix what's broken and make things better that could be better. And, Chad, I mean, you've been coming up with good ideas, Chad, but the people that you've been reaching out to for help are just ridiculous. Like, you talked about Bakersfield's home court, which is an atrocity. It's an assault on the retinas. It makes people bleed from their eyeballs. It's just this big mess. And it needed to be fixed, and you reached out to Billy Joel.
Yeah, the piano man.
Well, what in the world? Like, this is a guy that has nothing to do with college basketball, might not even know where Bakersfield is, much less what their arena looks like. What made you think Billy Joel was the person that you should reach out to for help?
You think you can do better?
Yes. Well, yeah, I think we need to quit messing around. Like, we're coming up with good ideas. We need some help. We're just not asking the right people for help. Like, we need people that can help. Here's my issue, and it's one that we all share. We've been complaining about it for the last 2 years, really, but it's getting worse and worse, and that is the issue of light versus dark uniforms. I don't even know how long, the home team wore white or a light color if you wanted to be creative, like Georgetown wore light gray, and like we had some teams wear gold or yellow. The visiting team wore dark. It's actually in the rule book that the teams will wear contrasting light and dark colors with the designated home team wearing the light or white color. People have just been blatantly ignoring this. It was one of our 10 commandments, and we see it over and over again. We need to rein it in. We need it to stop. And we need someone that can help make it stop. Okay. So we're done screwing around, aren't we, Chad?
Okay, David.
All right, we are going to get somebody to help us. Mr. Belding. Dennis Haskins. This is a guy that got things done. He was the principal of a school. He did a lot of things. He knows about athletics. this is who will help us. And here we go. If I can do this right, it's college basketball needs to get back to following the rules of teams wearing contrasting light and dark uniforms. You can read there, with the home team wearing light and the road team wearing dark. We need your help to make this happen. I am shooting this to him right now.
Mr. Belding.
Yes.
Okay. I you know what? On that note, you know what, David? Let's try one more time here. Did you find a coin yet so we can tell Cal Poly or UC Riverside who makes the conference tournament if they end up tied?
Yeah. A coin.
A coin. Okay. Flip the coin.
Okay. Well, here's – I couldn't find – would this work?
David, that's a bottle of alcohol.
Well, I mean, if you had the choice between a coin and a bottle of alcohol, which would you want?
I'll tell you what here. The winner of that coin flip is going to be playing UC Irvine. Quite honestly, we could let them just both go and play UC Irvine because neither one has a shot. Yeah. So on that note, both of you go show up 10 on 5. I don't even think that you could beat Irvine. Real good Irvine team, actually. But let's go to some final thoughts. Rocco, let me start with you.
Yeah, so a quick personal story that started the day off of college basketball this morning. I gave my grandmother a call who's 97 years old. She's a class of 1939 Valparaiso grad. And I got her into the Sister Jean stuff last year, and we've talked about Valpo during their fun years with Bryce Drew in 98 and some other years. So today we had my 97-year-old grandma against 99-year-old Sister Jean. And goddamn that Sister Jean, she's too powerful. So, unfortunately, maybe next year, Grandma.
Oh, wow.
John.
Now, that one threw me for a curveball. No, I was going to say, if we were going to be reaching out to uniforms, how do you not reach out to Paul Lucas over at ESPN's UniWatch? He probably could have gotten the puppet rolling and maybe actually gotten a response for a change.
Well, what's wrong with Mr. Belding?
Hey, what is going on?
David, you want to finish the show out?
Okay. And again, like a lot of opening round days, it's really building. The Ohio Valley has just been tremendous so far, and I think it's the first of many to come. It takes championship a little while to get rolling. I think sometimes we're so ready for championship week that when you first get to those opening round games of some of those under the radar conferences, it doesn't hit the spot right away. But like tomorrow and Sunday, it's just going to keep building. Like Sunday we have the semis of the SoCon, and it will be fabulous.
It will be, you know, watching yeah. Sanford play Mercer and VMI play. But on that note, I guess I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back again tomorrow night with another video notebook. But on behalf of Rocco Miller, John Slica, David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood, and we'll talk to you again real soon.